John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is tie is this, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, August 8, 2012. Egypt responds to Sunday's attacks with force, and Palestinian hunger strikers are abused by Israeli soldiers. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. At least 20 people, members of extremist groups, were killed when Egyptian Apache helicopters bombarded areas in El Arish and in Sinai, where armed extremists are believed to be based. Egyptian Apache helicopters bombarded vehicles transporting terrorists in three areas, Atoma Village, Ashalak Village, and Alataika Village. Armed fundamentalists also fired an anti-aircraft missile at one of the military Apache helicopters, forcing it to leave the area after also being subject to extensive gunfire. Egyptian soldiers are currently working with the help of Bedouin sheikhs in order to contain the situation in Atoma Village, known for housing the largest number of armed extremists. The confrontation started after 16 Egyptian policemen were killed Sunday during an early morning raid near the Gaza-Rafah crossing along the Egyptian border. And in Nablus, President Mahmoud Abbas said that the Palestinian Authority insists on going to the UN seeking international recognition of a Palestinian state under occupation. Abbas said that the PA is willing to take this step regardless of conflicts with other interests. The Palestinian president added, Israel neither halted settlement activities nor recognized the Palestinian territory occupied in 1967 as occupied territory. Thus, the only choice we have is to go to the UN equipped with a united Arab stance. Elsewhere, four Palestinian political prisoners currently imprisoned in Israeli military jails under administrative detention orders are continuing their hunger strikes despite deteriorating health conditions and abuse by Israeli soldiers, according to a joint press release issued by several human rights groups. The statement expresses outrage at the treatment of Palestinian prisoners and especially of those who are more vulnerable due to their hunger strike. They demand that previous prisoner agreements from May of this year and the non-derogable human rights of prisoners be respected. In addition to the right not to be beaten or tortured in custody, this means the release of prisoners under administrative detention orders, unrestricted access to hunger strikers by independent physicians, and the affirmation that released prisoners will not be rearrested. And near Bethlehem today, Israeli forces began building new houses on illegally confiscated Palestinian land. The Israeli military has seized hundreds of dunams of agricultural land in the town of El Hadar in order to connect the two illegal Israeli outposts of Daniel and Eliezer. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law, and the seizure of civilian land and property by the military is a violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which states that an occupying force may not confiscate civilian property or transfer its population into occupied territory. And finally today, in the southern part of the West Bank, towns in the Hebron Hills are witnessing extensive military activities, an issue that is raising fear among the residents of the impending demolition of their homes. The report indicated that two military helicopters transported paratroopers who landed in Al-Mughar village, one of eight villages that the Israelis have recently stated they will demolish in order to use the area for military training purposes. Sources said that the soldiers were masked and that they took pictures of caves, tents, and some structures, and also searched several homes, causing extensive damage, while some soldiers spilled milk jars and butter onto the ground. The report in Israeli daily Haaretz indicated that dozens of children were terrified by the invading soldiers, especially the mass soldiers who were deployed around the homes and tents. And that's all for today from IMEMC News. This was the Wednesday, August 8th Daily News Roundup from the Occupied Palestinian Territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, Kelly Joyner.
You may remember the Gaza aid convoys that were attacked by Israel in 2010 and bottled up in a Greek harbor last year. Now some activists from Norway are preparing another ship to Gaza, occupied Palestine, the SV Estelle. They sailed from Oslo, Norway on the 7th of August and plan to reach Gaza in October, hopefully joined by other ships. Like previous Gaza aid convoys, they will attempt to break Israel's blockade of the besieged Gaza Strip. The activists aboard the SV Estelle plan to use nonviolent resistance only if they are boarded by Israel. In 2010, in an act of maritime piracy, Israeli commandos boarded a Turkish ship in international waters that was part of another Gaza relief convoy. Nine people were killed by Israeli commandos in that illegal raid in international waters. All these convoys attempt to deliver medical supplies and humanitarian aid, not arms and soldiers. Yet the Israeli Navy acts like they're an armada of warships carrying an invasion force. Despite the history of repeated attacks on aid relief convoys to Gaza, these courageous Norwegian activists will not be deterred. Afghanistan, 7th of August. An Afghan government soldier suddenly turned and opened fire on occupation troops at a NATO base in Paktia province, killing one and wounding another. This has been going on since Afghanistan was fighting against the Soviet Union. Afghanistan, 8th of August. Two suicide bombers attacked NATO troops in eastern Afghanistan, killing three soldiers of unreported nationality. Afghanistan, 6th of August. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 7th of August. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 7th of August. A French soldier was killed by an unspecified mix of small arms and indirect fire, meaning mortars and rockets. Another French soldier and an Afghan government soldier were wounded as well. French troops are pulling out fast, but obviously not fast enough. Pakistan, 7th of August. A truck driver was killed in an attack on a NATO supply tanker in northwest Pakistan, according to official reports. The tanker, part of a convoy of 18, was attacked by two gunmen on a motorbike as it traveled through Khyber Agency on its way to Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 7th of August. A suicide truck bomber in Logar Province detonated near a NATO military base, wounding at least 13 people. At least two of the wounded were American soldiers. The truck belonged to a local contractor who worked on the base. No word if he was the attacker or the truck was stolen. Afghanistan, 6th of August. Presumed Taliban fighters used a donkey as a conscript suicide bomber, killing the donkey, three cops, and a senior police official. The bomb was detonated by remote control near the gates of a police headquarters when a district police chief arrived. I guess the Taliban has never heard of PETA. Mr. Barack Obama, this war just keeps getting uglier. Now is the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today, not 2 years from now in 2014, safely after the election.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. On the 5th of August, two Habaksha, survivors of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima, spoke out at D.C.'s annual anti-war and anti-nuclear vigil on the anniversary of the bombing. The recent nuclear mess at Fukushima in Japan, caused by nuclear reactors that Habaksha warned the Japanese government not to invite onto the island, has given new urgency to the voices of those who survived the atomic bombings.
I was in my home in the Yoshijima Hagoromo area of Hiroshima, just only 1 mile from the epicenter when the bombing occurred. I was 5 years and 4 months old on August 6, 1945. The summers in Hiroshima is hot and humid, so witch rain would regularly play outside in the morning when it was cool, and on that day, my friends were playing in an open area. That morning, because my mother was feeling bad with a cold, we hadn't finished breakfast yet, and I hadn't been allowed to go out and play.
8:15, just as I was about to run out of the house on an errand for my mother at the friend's house across the street, I heard the sound of a plane. My mother and brother both said, "Kuniko, it's a B-29. The moment I was about to step out my foot down outside, There was an incredible flash and the sound of an explosion, and everything went black. At the same time, my brother landed on me when I stood up. After a while, the walls of our house were leaning, and the inside of our house was all in disarray. Mother saw that a bomb had hit our house and grabbed us kids and ran to escape.
通りはやけどや怪我をして、人相も性別もはっきりわからない人たちが、ただ無言で右往左往しておりました。
On the road, there were people walking here and there without saying anything. Because of their injuries and burns, one couldn't tell if they were men or women. As for us, my mother had got only a light head injury from a flying rooftop, and we children were without injury. We were in the south part of Hiroshima, and since the army airfield in Yoshijima facing the Seto Island Sea was a fixed evacuation location, we joined many other people who were heading for the army airfield. On the way, we came across a school girl lying in the road, who we thought must have been mobilized for the war effort, and her body was burned all over. She was asking for water, saying, I'm hot, please give me water. The military had said that it was bad to give burn victims water, so my mother said, if we give you water, you will die. You must have to hang in there. The schoolgirl murmured, if my mother were here, she would give me water. We got up and left, but my mother couldn't get the schoolgirl out of her head. So we returned after a while, but just found her dead. My mother shedding tears and said, we should have given her water. This because a heavy burn at heart. This became a heavy burn at heart for all of us. And my mother, to her very last days, kept lamenting, saying, since she was going to die anyway, we should have given her water. During that time of our vacation, I vomited violently many times. Because I had eaten anything since breakfast, they say I just vomited up yellow gastric juices. On the night of the 6th, we sat in a daze, watching all night as Hiroshima burned red with flame. We knew that our house started to burn in that afternoon.
翌7日、倒れた建物の焼け跡や瓦など、障害物がいっぱいの道を迂回、繰り返し、たくさんの死体が散乱する道を歩いて、広島の北部に位置する川内村の親戚に立ちかかりで避難しました。
On the seventh day,It took us the whole day to evacuate to our relative's place in Kawauchi in the northern part of Hiroshima, taking many detours on streets overflowing with burned remains of collapsed houses, roof tiles and obstacles. We walked through a pile of corpses strewn on the road. After evacuating,We three children ran high fevers and suffered from diarrhea. But miraculously, we survived the bombing. The daughter of my father's friend, who was the same age as I, was trapped under the house, unable to get out herself, and others were unable to pull her out. She cried out, Father, I'll be a good girl from now on. I promised.Never to do anything bad. Please get me out of here. But she disappeared among the flames. Also, my friend with whom I used to play in the morning died in the heart in the heated blast. Many children lost their lives under the mushroom cloud. Such a short life.
心地より150メートルの音安バスの近く、今は平和公園になっているところに住んでいるところは、まだ骨も見つかっていません。
Our cousin lived near Motoyasu Bridge, 160 years from the epicenter that is now part of the Peace Park, should have been killed, but we have not even found their bones. I have survived, but the fear that I experienced on that day remains deep in my heart many years later.I often suffer from nightmares, dreams of me flying in the sky, and dreams of being paralyzed with fear, unable to figure out what to do with after murdering so many people. Then I scream and wake up.
母は長生きをしましたが、骨粗
鬆
症となり、背骨が次々と潰れ、まるでセムシのように背中が丸くなり、晩年は痛い痛いとほとんど寝たっきりの生活となりました。
My mother lived a long time, but in her last years, because of osteoporosis and the deterioration of her spinal column, her back was curved like a hunchback, and she lived out her last days in great pain in a bedridden state.My brother, who is 80 years old now, was told by a doctor that he has a bone of 100 years old. In his early 60s, he collapsed from a heart attack, and because his kidneys are impaired, he was peritoneal dialysis 3 times a day. He used his own body to lay bare his terrifying experience withradiation that has destroyed his body, wanting people to know of the horrors of atomic bombs. He is now seeking recognition of Japan's responsibility for the war and responsibility to the survivors through legal battles, and he spurs on his declining body to continue his struggle of advocacy in Japan.
私自身が健康も生活も恵まれ、二人の息子と二人の孫娘を授かり、順調に生きてきました。
I am personally blessed with health, and my two boys and two granddaughters live without problems. But I cannot forget the anxieties of being a hibakusha. When my children and grandchildren were born, I prayed that they would havehealthy bodies like normal children. Our friend broke off an engagement in the face of opposition by the betrothed's parents, who said, for the sake of our grandchildren, we will not allow our child to marry with a hibakusha. Another friend's older son, when he became an adult, and her daughter's daughter, when in college, contracted cancer.Fortunately, both of them recovered, but my friend blamed herself since she is a hibakusha.
私は67年間、被爆者と呼ばれ、健康への不安、いわれのない差別を黙って受けて生きてきましたが、今の世界の各状況を思うと、もう黙っているわけにはいきません。
I have been called a hibakusha for 67 years.And have lived with anxiety about my health and borne unspeakable discrimination silently. But thinking about the world situation now, I cannot remain silent anymore. I have to raise my voice to say we must abolish nuclear weapons and we must not wage war in order to avoid creating more hibakusha.And so as to leave our children with a peaceful and beautiful planet, please join me in saying, no more war, no more nuclear weapons.
Talking with the hibakusha for a number of years about the fact that in a few years, in a very few short years, we're no longer going to be able to listen to the survivors.
So listen to them while you can. And remember that nuclear power plants carry such a large store of radioactive waste that the potential contamination from a nuclear accident exceeds even that from a nuclear bombing. I say no more Hiroshimas, no more Nagasakis, and no more Fukushimas. You may have heard our coverage of the July 28th civil disobedience that shut down the Hobet Mountaintop Removal Coal Mine in Lincoln County, West Virginia. That is the largest mountaintop removal mine in all of West Virginia, and shutting it down with a tree sit and lockdowns of heavy equipment netted a ferocious response from the police and the courts. Activist Dustin Steele was beaten by police, and a total of 20 activists were arrested on July 28th and held on $25,000 apiece bail. It took until Tuesday, the 31st of July, to get Dustin out so he could receive any treatment needed for injuries inflicted by the police. The following day, Wednesday, the 1st of August, 9 more of the protesters had to take plea agreements, pleading guilty to trespassing, paying a $500 fine, and taking a year on probation to be released, as it was clear that West Virginia had no intention of releasing any of them pending trial dates. It took until Tuesday, the 7th of August, over a week after the protest, for the last 10 defendants to be released on the same plea deal. No right to a trial was offered unless protesters were willing to either sit in jail for months, raise a $500,000 that activists don't have for bail, or shell out a non-refundable $50,000 for a bail bondsman. The West Virginia State Police originally were founded to support coal mine bosses against unions and strikes, and appear to this day to be a wholly owned and operated subsidiary of the coal mine owners. It won't matter in the end. A growing movement of protest and direct action is going to shut down mountaintop removal mining one way or the other. On the 4th and 6th of August, there were a pair of animal rights protests against Air France KLM, one of the last airlines on Earth that will fly monkeys and other animals to vivisection laboratories such as Huntington Life Sciences. The first protest was outside the French ambassador's home on Saturday night, the 4th of August, and the second was at the offices of Patton Boggs, the main lobbyist in the U.S. for Air France KLM, on Monday, the 6th of August. On the 4th of August, protesters showed up outside the home of the French ambassador in Washington, D.C., demanding that Air France KLM stop flying animals to so-called research laboratories.
The French government owned 18.6% of all shares in Air France KLM.
Air France KLM, and what did Air France KLM do?
Air France KLM is the largest transporter of laboratory animals to vivisection laboratories around the world.
Does that include primates?
That includes primates.
Decision and stop transporting primates for vivisection.
Pro protesters also had a message for the French ambassador's neighbors in nearby houses.
So we apologize for the inconvenience, but if you disapprove of something that countless countries and countless airlines across the world have chosen now to take a stand against, then please visit your neighbor and let him know that you do not feel that what he is doing is right, and continue to advocate for Air France to transport primates.
Protesters even came up with a new meaning for Air France, KLM, saying the KLM stands for Killing Little Monkeys. Air France, Killing Little Monkeys.
Air France is
Killing Little Monkeys.
Air France is
Killing Little Monkeys.
The French government.
Killing Little Monkeys.
The French government is
Killing Little Monkeys.
You may not be concerned about the primates being transported by Air France, but you should be very concerned about this. The rising tide of activists taking action against the transport of primates for vivisection. We know that activists in your home country are taking action to stop this barbarity. And activists here will continue to be outside of your residence until Air France joins the legions of countless airlines that have also decided to stop transporting primates for vivisection. You should be ashamed of yourself and of the bloody stain that you have put on the French flag by allowing Air France to continue engaging in this practice. We'll be back!
We'll be back! We'll be back!
We'll be back!
We'll be
back!
It didn't take long for protesters to return to a target associated with Air France. 2 days later, protesters descended on the D.C. offices of lobbying firm Patton Boggs, which is the main lobbyist for Air France in the United States.
They can't stop us, let them try!
On the 6th of August, the campaign in D.C. against Air France for flying monkeys and other animals to vivisection labs to be tortured continued with a visit to their main lobbyist, Patton Boggs.
Lobbyist is Patton Boggs. They lobby for Air France.
Air France, they lobby for Bristol-Myers Squibb, and they also lobby for Walmart.
Oh, Walmart. Oh, God.
Rolling in on Patton Boggs, lobbyist. Patton Boggs. Just ask the French ambassador about animal rights protesters coming to people's houses. Better yet, dump Air France as a client, or convince Air France to stop flying monkeys and other animals to vivisection laboratories like Huntington Life Science for a life of torture. The campaign in D.C. and globally to close Huntington Life Sciences, a contract animal research or vivisection laboratory, continues. Huntington Life Sciences has been caught in 7 separate undercover investigations doing things like punching beagle puppies in the face and dissecting live monkeys without any kind of anesthesia. In addition, scientists who've gone public about it when told the penicillin test results without regard for what the studies actually show have been fired and sued. The campaign against Huntington Life Sciences works by going after bankers and stockbrokers, of whom they now have none, going after customers and suppliers, and in this way, gradually getting Huntington Life Sciences into an economic chokehold so they can be strangled once and for all. Suppliers, customers, and other collaborators of Huntington Life Sciences have attempted to respond with injunctions prohibiting any kind of protest at all in violation of the First Amendment, but usually this just causes the campaign to escalate. An example of that would be what's happening now with a campaign against Danaher, the corporate parent of Beckman Coulter, which has gotten injunctions against protests in California. Beckman Coulter is a supplier of laboratory equipment to puppy-killing Huntington Life Sciences. Their contract is worth only $85,000, yet they are suing animal activists in Los Angeles who are protesting this contract instead of dumping Huntington Life Sciences. Their corporate parent is Danaher Corporation. Danaher's senior vice president, Jonathan Graham, lives in D.C. in Upper Northwest. On the 4th of August, animal rights activists showed up outside his home at almost 10 p.m. at night.
Good evening, members of Ordway Street. We are here at your neighbor's house, Jonathan Graham, who's the senior vice president of Danaher Corporation. Danaher Corporation is a parent company of Beckman Coulter, which supplies lab equipment to Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility that murders 500 animals each and every day of the week for products like bleach, Splenda, toothpaste, and cutting lotion, and Vioxx. Vioxx was tested at Huntington Life Sciences and went on to kill tens of thousands of people. Jonathan Graham, your involvement with Beckman and your Beckman Coulter's involvement with Huntington Life Sciences is not going unnoticed. And we are here outside of your home demanding you sever all ties with Huntington Life Sciences. HLS!
Shut them down!
HLS!
Shut them down!
There's never an excuse!
Danaher Corporation would really benefit from dumping Beckman Coulter. It was only 2 days later, on the 6th of August, Monday, that protesters showed up outside Danaher's offices in D.C. On the West Coast, FBI Joint Terrorism Task Forces and heavily armed SWAT cops raided a Seattle home on the 10th of July looking for anarchist literature and have served several grand jury subpoenas as part of a fishing expedition into West Coast anarchists. In the first week of August, there was a wave of punitive attacks and protests at courthouses and police facilities around the nation, striking back at those responsible for grand juries and their subpoenas. Here is a list of some of the punitive strikes. August 3rd, Seattle. Windows smashed, doors battered down at a Seattle municipal courthouse. Anarchist literature left inside, since they seem to be so interested in investigating anarchists. San Francisco, 2nd of August. Police car tires were slashed and their windows were etched with acid. Madison County, Illinois, 3rd of August. The courthouse door was spray painted with graffiti. Asheville, North Carolina, 2nd of August. Protesters held a noisy protest within earshot of inmates at the jail after protesting at the site of a new, larger jail under construction. In addition, here is part of a statement released by two people who are refusing to cooperate with the grand jury. Quote, "Hi, my name is Dennison. I will be reading a statement on behalf of Dennison Williams, Leland Plant. The two of us were subpoenaed to the secret grand jury to begin meeting on Thursday investigating anarchists. We are releasing this statement to make clear our intention to resist the grand jury. We will not cooperate with their investigation. If we appear before the grand jury, we will not answer any questions other than our names. If we are asked additional questions, we will invoke our First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendment rights. Under no circumstances will we talk about other people. Hey, FBI and grand juries, don't think you can stop anarchists with house raids and repression. These tools make people angry and lead to retaliation. When protest is outlawed, only outlaws can protest. And you don't want to go there! This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com.
The Monsanto Corporation, an international leader in biotechnology, is currently spending millions of dollars on an advertising campaign to convince the public and politicians that the genetically engineered food crops that they've developed and are marketing is helping to feed more people, protecting natural resources, and promoting biodiversity. Monsanto's slogan is, "We're all in this together, producing more, conserving more, improving lives." But the Union of Concerned Scientists, which has studied Monsanto's claims, challenges many of the company's assertions of benefits for agriculture and society. To that end, the union has produced their own series of advertisements placed on Washington, D.C. buses and transit stations near the U.S. Department of Agriculture with the goal of setting the record straight on genetically modified crops. In one ad, the union declares that Monsanto's Roundup Ready crops, genetically engineered to tolerate the company's Roundup herbicide, increased herbicide use by an estimated 383 million pounds between 1996 and 2008, and monarch butterflies have laid 81% fewer eggs thanks to habitat loss since Roundup Ready was introduced. Another ad asserts that Monsanto's products aren't the answer to meeting the needs of a hungry planet. The union says that genetically engineered crops have so far done little to improve yields in the U.S. Your reporter spoke with Karen Perry Stillerman, senior analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists Food and Environment Program, who challenges the Monsanto Corporation's claims on the benefits of genetically engineered food crops.
Well, I should say that Monsanto is not the only company that's doing this, but they are the industry leader, and so we've looked at the industry, but we've also looked some at Monsanto's specific products. And so a couple of years ago, in 2009, actually, we produced a report called Failure to Yield, and we decided to look at these problems one by one and the claims one by one. So we wanted to look. They were saying at the time, Monsanto was running a big ad campaign on public radio, in fact, and places like New Yorker magazine and other places, and they were specifically saying that their seeds were increasing yield. So we looked at that, and my colleague Doug Gray and Sherman looked at the data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the scientific literature to really kind of tease out, well, what is the situation with the crops that Monsanto is and other companies are genetically engineering? Are they really increasing in yields, and is the genetic splicing that they're doing, is that what's responsible? And what we found is, you know, of course, over the past decade or more, yields of crops like corn and soybeans have gone up dramatically. Farmers are producing more. But when we really teased out what was responsible, we found out that it was mostly attributable to just common plant breeding and improved farming techniques, and that in fact the genes that the companies were putting in there, one of which Monsanto uses to make the crops tolerate herbicides, weed killers, and so you can plant the crop and then spray herbicides over it once it's growing, and the crop itself doesn't die, but the weeds do, and that's a really great thing for farmers. But what it doesn't do is help increase yields, and so if we're interested in increasing food production, that doesn't do it.
Karen, in your research looking at some of the problems associated with genetically modified crop seeds, I read a report that said that Roundup Ready crops, which are resistant to that particular Roundup pesticide, may be associated with a reduction in the population of monarch butterflies in the Midwest. Do you want to tell our listeners a bit about that?
Well, it's part of the problem with agriculture on an industrial scale as we're practicing it today. The Roundup and other herbicides are used to keep fields weed free, and as the price of things like corn has gone up in recent years, farmers have planted more and more of it, so they're leaving less and less land in sort of a more natural, weedy state. And monarch butterflies just happen to be a species that rely on certain kinds of weeds to lay their eggs in and to eat. So it is a problem that the more herbicides that are used and the, more land area that is kept free of weeds of all kinds, the less kind of diversity that you're going to see. And it's not necessarily something that Monsanto set out to do, but it is an impact of the industrial kind of agriculture that their products really perpetuate and exacerbate.
So, Karen, what's the objective of the Union of Concerned Scientists campaign here? What would you like to see in terms of new regulations on companies like Monsanto that produce genetically modified crop seeds? Is that where you want to go with this in terms of having more stringent regulation here, or is it just to give the public and farmers more awareness of these claims which you believe are false?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, we do want to see these kinds of experimental crops or genetically engineered crops regulated more tightly for lots of reasons, because the regulation is pretty lax and in terms of really being able to sort out things like health impacts and environmental impacts, we'd like to see more study done, and the regulations don't require that at all. But I think more importantly, what we'd like to see is the USDA in particular and Congress in the Farm Bill, which is the piece of legislation that Congress debates every 5 years that really sets the rules and incentives for agriculture. We'd like to see those folks really get more serious about alternatives because, as I mentioned, the genetic engineering is complicated. It takes a long time to produce these crops and huge investments. And what we find is that simple plant breeding, the kind that is done at universities and by researchers at the U.S. Department of Agriculture itself, can actually achieve the kinds of goals that Monsanto and its competitors talk about more quickly and more cheaply and just more efficiently generally. But those plant breeders are really starved for resources in recent years. So we'd really like to see more research dollars going into simple plant breeding of the kind that can produce results.
That was Karen Perry Stillerman, Program Manager and Senior Analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists Food and Environment Program. Find links examining Monsanto's claims on genetically engineered food crops by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Well, DNA, it's natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life, each one dependent on another, and so the circle it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, He made lots of strange, unnatural things, and now food crops grow on the ocean floor. Cows, they grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
The Green Party of the United States has run candidates for president since 1996, when Ralph Nader first undertook a national campaign. Nader's candidacy 4 years later in 2000, where he won almost 3 million votes, was the focus of much news coverage when the citizen activist was blamed as a spoiler by supporters of Democratic candidate Al Gore. At issue was the former vice president's loss in the state of Florida by 537 votes after a controversial U.S. Supreme Court decision prohibited a recount of all ballots cast in the state. Since 2000, the Green Party has continued to run candidates at the local, state, and federal level, but no candidate has had as much national impact as Ralph Nader. Currently, the Green Party holds more than 130 local offices, including mayors, members of city councils, and school boards. But the U.S. winner-take-all system, where Republicans and Democrats dominate, has been a major obstacle to the Greens and other third parties, who are unable to effectively challenge electoral rules that freeze out and marginalize minor party candidates. This in contrast to the success of many other Green parties in Europe and around the world, where systems of proportional representation have seen Greens win enough seats in federal elections to serve as partners in coalition governments. This year, the U.S. Green Party presidential nominee is Jill Stein, a physician from Massachusetts who, as a Green, challenged Mitt Romney for governor of Massachusetts in 2002. Her vice presidential running mate is Sherry Hunkela, national coordinator for the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. Stein won the nomination over TV star Roseanne Barr. Stein's campaign is built around her Green New Deal that advocates the right to a job at a living wage, transition to a sustainable green economy, a financial sector serving Americans, and citizen empowerment. Your reporter spoke with Jill Stein, who talks about her platform and why progressive voters should consider supporting her candidacy this November.
We are on track to be on the ballot in somewhere around 42, 45 states, so that somewhere between 90 and 95% of voters will have a real choice. When they walk into the voting booth, they won't have to choose between just two candidates that have been both bought and paid for by Wall Street. We are currently on the ballot in about 21 states plus the District of Columbia, and those are states who've already had their deadlines, and we are on track to be on the ballot in most of the remaining states.
In comparison to previous years' presidential candidates for the Green Party, is that pretty good? Sounds good.
Yes, it is. It is good, and it reflects, I think, that it's a whole new ballgame out there, and a lot of people who had wandered away from the party, you know, in the years where there was a lot of hope out there for Barack Obama and the Democratic Party illusion, a lot of those people are wandering back now, saying that this politics of fear that said you had to go for, you know, your fears. You had to vote your fears and not what you really want and deserve and the real solutions that we need to get behind. That strategy has not been, you know, it's basically been a strategy of silence, political silence, and that doesn't move you forward at all. In fact, it just unleashes the brakes on the system and allows us to accelerate in the wrong direction. So our motto now, or one of our mantras, is that the politics of fear has actually delivered everything we were afraid of, all those reasons we were told to just, you know, be quiet, go along to get along, do the lesser evil thing, you know, because you didn't want an expanding war, you didn't want the attack on our civil liberties, you didn't want these massive Wall Street bailouts, you didn't want the climate meltdown. We've gotten all of that in enormous, huge quantities because there has not been an opposition voice. That opposition has basically been lulled to sleep under a Democratic president who has embraced most of the key policies of George Bush. That's not to say there aren't some differences around the margins. There are, but those differences aren't enough to save your life or to save your jobs or to provide your health care. You know, on count after count, we're basically getting the Republican agenda in a nice, friendly, Democratic wrapper with, you know, with beautiful oratory.
in the minds of many people in the country who are Democratic voters or lean Democratic, Ralph Nader in that candidacy and the Green Party ticket was blamed as being the spoiler and throwing the election to George Bush. Whether or not that's true, how do you respond to the, you know, what's often said about third parties is that the structure is such in our country now, we have a winner-take-all system, and it's very difficult to imagine a Green Party or any third party rising to the levels of the major parties to actually have a possibility of winning. That the lesser of two evilism, I guess, is still alive out there where people consider, you know, a Romney candidacy versus an Obama candidacy and maybe don't like either one, but will ignore the third party, feeling that a protest vote may be just throwing their vote away.
Unfortunately, the undemocratic system that we have serves the current ruling parties very well, so they are not interested in reforming them at all, which is why we can't just sit back and try to create a fair system and then we'll run. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. We've been asking nicely for a long time. It doesn't work. So we have to actually run. And most people are really working hard right now. You know, one out of every two Americans is either in poverty or low income and heading towards poverty. And these numbers are just, they continue to climb as wages continue to decline. So we're addressing, you know, the key issues, the key survival issues that people are really grappling with. We want to create jobs for every American, put an end to unemployment. We know how to do this. We did it in the Great Depression in the 1930s. That's what we call the Green New Deal. So it solves the economic problem at the same time that it solves the climate crisis, because it creates jobs in our communities that transition us to the clean energy economy for the future. So we're focusing on that, but we attach to it democracy reform. They're actually part of our Green New Deal, which calls for not only creating jobs, but also financial reforms that enable us to make the investments that we need to create these jobs, and the democracy reforms, including things like instant runoff voting, getting big money out of politics, freeing the public airwaves so that those private corporations who use them have to provide free public airtime to qualified candidates and other important public interest issues and campaigns, so that the public airwaves are actually used for the public benefit. The minute you do that, you know what happens? The bottom goes out of the cost of campaigns, because that's where the big money goes. So suddenly, if you free up the airwaves, then the predators can throw as much money as they want at their favorite candidates, but they no longer have an advantage because they can't buy the media anymore. This is in our hands. The future's in our hands. Nobody's going to do it for us. And we have to decide whether we're going to have a planet and a society that are habitable by human beings, and whether we're going to maintain civilization. Or are we going to just let it fall apart and go back to the Dark Ages and worse?
That was Green Party presidential nominee Jill Stein. For more information on the Green Party and Jill Stein's candidacy, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.